From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the sixth day of August, 2020. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net. And a bit later in the program, Mike Tenura at T-Storm Weather in Chicago will join us to take a look at the weather forecast. Along the way, we'll hear from Deputy Undersecretary at USDA Sinski about the CFAP program and money that is still available to producers.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
September corn today a quarter higher at $3.11 and a quarter. December new crop at $3.23 and 3 quarters in the harvest month, up a half, and March unchanged, $3.35 and a half the settlement price. Next year's July at $3.50 and a half, down a quarter. August soybeans a penny and a quarter lower, $8.80 and 3 quarters of a cent the settlement price. November at $8.78 for the new crop harvest month, 3 quarters lower in the beans. In January, $8.84 and a half, 3 quarters lower. The bean oil down 18 cents. The bean meal down $1.60. Wheat futures soft red. The nearby September 9 and a half lower, in July of next year down 8 and a half. It settled at $5.25 and a quarter. The hard red July at $4.55 and 3 quarters, 8 cents lower on the afternoon. Live cattle futures in Chicago. August contract up 32 and a half. However, the October on out were lower, down 47 and a half cents. And that OCC contract at 106.97 and a half, and August feeder cattle were down $1.32 and a half at 143.47 and a half. Lean hogs for the day up 30 cents at 49.75. We're now joined by Matt Bennett at agmarket.net. He's in Windsor, Illinois. Hey, Matt, thanks for being with us today. How are things on the farm in Shelby County?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our conditions look pretty darn good. I mean, we've had what I would say, and some people are going to say, is a little too much rain a couple of times. Last week, for instance, we had over 6 inches of rain. And so, of course, we're going to lose some ponds. But there's no doubt that for the most part, this early planted stuff, especially, you know, looks awfully good. And then you get into some of your May planted and replanted, and you're pretty happy about that as well. So bottom line for us is we feel production could be rather large in this part of the world. And, you know, you could be looking at it, you know, at some record bean and corn yields both, I guess, from my vantage point.
Well, how big might they be by the time we get to that production report next week on the 12th?
Well, you know, I think as far as locally, obviously we could be looking at awfully big numbers, but what's the USDA going to come out with? I think a 182 or 3 is very much possible. When you look at, you know, when you look at the fact that you had similar crop ratings, you know, back in 2018, you know, and you came in, I believe, 4.5, 5 bushel above trend, you know, that would suggest that, you know, it wouldn't be totally outlandish for them to come in at a 182 or 3. We're actually at a 183 as a company, just based upon what we think is going to come out in this report. I'm not saying that's what we think the final is. There's no doubt Iowa's had some issues, super dry in parts of Iowa where it's certainly going to affect production. But at the same time, I think enough of the Corn Belt's gotten enough rain, you know, that some of the yields on corn where it's good could be really, really good and could offset some of your poor yields. I think soybeans, you know, I think in August, USDA is not going to come out super guns a-blazing. I think we're at a 51.4 for this report, and I feel pretty confident that if the forecast verifies, 51.4 is going to be at least maybe even a couple of bushel low as compared to the final number, because I do think this bean crop is in good shape, conditions are good, and I think that it's got the potential to be a pretty special crop.
Farmers in trouble already for this year, for the new crop as it relates to marketing?
Well, it's certainly late in the ballgame. You know, you talk to most elevator systems and they'll tell you that marketings are way behind what they think they should be or would like to have seen. You know, I think it's been tough. You know, you look, for instance, at corn. You know, you've been below the spring insurance price the entire marketing year. Since 2000, we haven't had that. You know, we've always traded at or above the spring insurance price during the growing season, and we haven't gotten that opportunity this year. So, you know, that's made it a very tough predicament for producers to step in and sell, especially before they could quantify production to much of an extent. Soybeans, I don't know that we have as much of a quote-unquote excuse. I think whenever it comes to soybeans, you know, we haven't been near as far below the spring insurance price for much of this growing season as what we were with corn. And I think, you know, here lately, getting some of the rains that we've had, we've been trying to tell producers, hey, if you would just take the price that you can receive currently times your expected production, I think that you're going to find that you can find a fair amount of black ink. I think whenever you're projecting, for instance, a lot of producers in this part of the world probably projected a 65 bushel yield, you know, whereas we're talking to producers right now that think that might be 10 bushel low. So you add 10 bushels to your balance sheet, you know, or to your equation, if you will, and that changes everything dramatically.
So what else have you been considering at this point? I have a couple of questions that are not quite off the wall, but just unique and different. But I'd like to know what you've been thinking about as it relates to the field and the farm and harvest season this time around. And maybe as related to COVID-19 and availability, this is the stuff that I've been thinking about, of semis and labor and kids back in school and all kinds of things.
Well, you know, at this stage of the game, I believe, like, for instance, Bo goes to community college, and I think only one of his classes is going to be in person. The other ones are going to be online. So I'm counting on him to be a laborer for me, you know, a little bit more so than even normal. And so, you know, we feel pretty confident. You know, my dad and I, we've got a couple of guys that are seasonal. We feel pretty confident that we'll have labor available, but there's no question that given the size of the crop here in Central Illinois, labor could be at a premium, especially with what you've got going on. I know that if a guy doesn't have, or a gal doesn't have any issues going on, and they're able to get in a truck and stay in a truck and not have any contact with anybody all day, that's one thing. But, you know, if you're going to be around a bunch of people, obviously there's some concerns, especially with, you know, a lot of the people that help around some of these farms here in rural America, you know, tend to be a little bit older, you know, in age anyway. You know, we personally have gotten a lot of people that, you know, maybe are retired or have farmed before. And, you know, I know that segment of the population is probably a little more concerned, you know, with what we know, you know, about this particular virus. But I think that it's going to be an issue for a lot of folks. For us personally, I feel like we're going in pretty good shape, and we feel pretty confident we're going to be able to get through harvest with the help that we need.
Can I just ask a couple of other things logistically? And I don't know whether you've thought about this as well. So do you fill bins first? Normally that would be the case, or do you hedge just because you've got, you're pretty sure you're going to have enough crop to put full bins together later and move grain early into the elevator system?
You know, I've got to think that there could be a little bit of an opportunity early in the fall. I mean, for instance, there's a lot of people that are given a first half, second half set bid. You know, and some of your August bids are actually pretty good now. Whether or not you're going to be able to harvest in August is another thing. I would have told you that 3 weeks ago we'd probably get that opportunity, but I didn't know it was going to cool down as much as what it has. And so, you know, that's slowing things up just a little bit. I know we're going to get warm again. You know, are we going to stay warm? If we are, and I have some confidence, I want to try to secure some first half set bids as far as what I'm taking to the elevator. For me personally, we moved, and as a company, we moved pretty significantly here this week, just with physical bushels on soybeans. We feel pretty confident that using, again, our production times the price that we could secure beans at, especially with some of these quick ship bids, we feel pretty good about going ahead and making a sale. And then, you know, there's hardly any carry in this bean market. Then just go ahead and buy a call spread on farther out if a person wants to stay long, keep the price at a minimum. As far as corn's concerned, it's a little more complicated. If you're safely above APH, then I would get a little more aggressive, you know, with some sales that I know I can't store at home. If I want to get long corn later, I understand that. For the time being, I don't see this huge opportunity, really for corn or beans. And so I want to be careful on what I might spend on a re-ownership type situation. But I think, delivering some of these bushels early on and filling bins later might be where I would lean to answer your question, because I think that a person might get rewarded on some of their first bushels as far as a little bit of a push there.
And I'm glad you went to the economics, because I frankly was thinking about coronavirus mitigation issues and whether labor later in the year would be harder to get, especially if you have to get semi drivers and semis from some other place, and there happens to be a surge, it's of some sort that's related to everybody going back into classrooms or whatever the case might be. And who knows whether that'll happen. I was just thinking about what happens inside the system this fall and how do you plan around it was my thought. But right. The economics may be telling you to do this anyway. So I suppose, and that's far more incentive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Generally speaking, anything else that you're keeping an eye on? I know we still have policy issues dealing with China at this point. The president making some statements at this hour, in fact, in Ohio that probably will give us an indication of where he is on China and labor, relatively speaking, in the United States. So we'll have to pay attention to that. But there are many things that are happening, and farmers haven't all picked up CFAP. I'm running a story here just in a moment about the availability of money still from CFAP that producers didn't sign up for that. And same thing for PPP. I suppose that surprises me some. How about you?
Yeah, it surprises me a little bit as well. I would think that the person would want to go after, you know, everything they could, especially in the kind of environment they're in. I think, you know, there's definitely a lot of things going on. One thing that I think is very interesting that we definitely should keep in the back of our mind, you know, the dollar's off just a little bit again today. The dollar's been awfully weak. You see some inflationary type stuff going on. I mean, for instance, the silver market's up about $10 in the last 3 weeks. I mean, just an incredible performance. You've got gold over 2,000 an ounce. Crude oil isn't really doing a ton, but there are definitely some signs of some inflationary stuff going on. You look at, for instance, China, and they auctioned another 4 million tons of corn off. Since the month of May, you're looking at 35 to 40 million metric ton of corn that they've offered up for auction. Every single bushel's been sold, and their interior prices, are running $7.50 a bushel. I mean, they can buy corn off the U.S., take it to China, and make money on it. So I've got to think that moving forward, you're still going to see really good sales. I think the president and his team probably know that China, from a food security standpoint, needs and wants to secure those bushels at some point. And so, maybe that puts them a little bit in the driver's seat. But I think regardless of the rhetoric that comes out, whether the U.S. and China hate each other and whatever we're doing, if we've got the cheapest corn and beans that they can secure, they're going to find a way to buy them.
They put that right there in the phase one agreement. Whoever's got the lowest price gets the purchase. So,
absolutely.
I imagine that's what they'll continue to do. Hey, thank you so much for spending so much time with me today. And we'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me, bud.
Matt Bennett is with agmarket.net. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Up next, CFAP. That's not been as big a hit as USDA thought it might be. So, you know, the pace of payments from the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, otherwise known as CFAP, has slowed recently. USDA is a long way away from distributing the full $16 billion in direct payments to farmers.
We are looking at that to see, you know, what are the reasons that, you know, right now we're around $6.8 billion that have been paid out.
That's USDA Deputy Secretary Steve Sinski, who says producers have until the 28th of this month to apply.
I know anecdotally I've talked to some producers who are now just beginning to sign up and fill out their form, so hopefully folks will get that in. But we know that the need's out there, so we do think that there's going to be the demand for it.
Could we see some changes to the formula with the next round of CFAP when it happens, so payments reach more farmers? Sinski says they're exploring some options now that they have more money from Congress to work with.
They gave us $14 billion to be in CCC funds, but that wasn't going to be made available until after our June 30th financial statements. And so now we are just now receiving those dollars. We're taking a look to see how do we spend those dollars to basically try to top up. We're taking a look to see how do we change the formulas to try to increase producers, revenue there. And obviously we want to try to help producers as much as possible.
And Sinski added that there will not be another MFP or market facilitation payment now that USMCA and phase one of the trade deal with China are in force. He says China has been stepping up with purchases of U.S. commodities lately, but
they need to do more. If they're going to meet that $36.5 billion mark, they have to step it up even more. And so we're monitoring that very closely.
Sinski was the keynote speaker at the American Soybean Association's 100th anniversary celebration in Indiana on Tuesday of this week. Our story was provided to us by Eric Fiverr, who's at Hoosier Ag Today out of Lafayette, Indiana. They're also known as the HAP Network. On this Thursday, we're joined by Mike Tenura. He's a T-Storm Weather out of Chicago. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us for the day.
Great being here, Todd. Thanks for having me.
All right. So let's talk about crop conditions across the Midwest. USDA has a set of numbers, the production figures, which will come out next week on the 12th. Lots of folks have been talking about really big yields for corn, but there are still some problems. And I've driven through parts of those areas in Iowa that have been dry. Have they gotten rainfall, and what are your expectations?
Well, they're getting a little bit of rain today along the southern fringe of the dry area in Iowa, but they need a lot more. But the thing you need to keep in mind from the United States perspective is that outside of Iowa, most all other growing areas have been near to wetter than normal over the last 30, 40, 50, even 60 days. So the problem in Iowa is relatively isolated. It's just affecting that state, but no matter where else you go, most other areas are not experiencing that level of dryness. So in the ideal world, we would see a big rain event in Iowa, and then everybody would be happy because they all would have received significant rainfall over the last several weeks. There are some storms coming up for Iowa, not only today, but even tomorrow, Saturday, and Sunday. But it's very difficult to pinpoint exactly where the heaviest totals are going to fall over the next 3 to 4 days. The most likely scenario is for storms to focus further to the north in the Dakotas and Minnesota this weekend, and then further to the south and east early next week, including parts of Illinois, Indiana, Ohio, and even Michigan as a cool front moves through. So a week from now, more than likely what we're going to be saying is that, yes, Iowa saw a little bit of rain, and a lot of other areas also saw some rain, but we're kind of in the same boat where we were before, where most areas are getting some rains, and Iowa, unfortunately, is not one of those areas.
What else are you watching around the planet?
Well, the main thing to keep an eye on regards temperatures, what we're experiencing now is pretty ideal for corn and soybeans. It's been much cooler than normal over the last week, with high temperatures only in the 60s and 70s, and lows in the 50s and even the 40s at times in parts of the Corn Belt. It's going to warm up a lot over the next several days. And even though it might turn a little bit cooler next week when a front moves through, it's not going to return temperatures to the levels where we are now. It'll probably be several weeks, if not even into September, before we see temperatures this cool again. Highs will be in the 80s and 90s with lows in the 60s and 70s later on this weekend and especially going forward. And that just means that the ideal scenario for filling of both crops won't be there. Temperatures will be much closer to normal and even a little bit above normal. And again, ideally at this time of the year, you would stay cool. So forgetting about that now for a moment, the other things that we're keeping an eye on are what's happening in France and Ukraine. France has been very dry for a while, and we think that's affecting their corn and sunflower crops in a negative way. In Ukraine, it's kind of the same story, though. There have been a little bit of better rains at times in parts of that country, but still not an ideal scenario for them. And both France and Ukraine look to stay pretty dry going forward. And that's largely because upper-level high pressure will center near the European Union and block a lot of the rain chances over the next 5 to 10 days. The only other thing to keep in mind is what's happening in Australia. You might recall that we've gone through two severe droughts in Australia over the last two seasons, and that hurt the wheat crops in both years. Well, it's different right now in that a lot of rain is coming up. It's even raining as we speak in some of the eastern growing areas of Australia. We're going to see a couple of significant rains over the next 10 days, and that will create a situation that's much different than what we had over the last two seasons, with it being much wetter now than what it was back then. So conditions are looking much better for Australia's wheat once we get into the middle of the month.
Can I come back here to the United States as we close out our time together? I have one more question for you. We often talk about whether the Gulf of Mexico is open to providing rainfall into the Midwest and the Mississippi River Valley area. What do you see in the month of August and maybe in early September, if anything, as it relates to indications as to whether those rainfalls can come from that area?
It's going to be a little difficult to directly tap into that source of humidity. And the reason is because of the cool weather that we have in place. This is a dry air mass that's originating from Canada. And even though it exits as we move through the weekend and into next week, the problem is that low-level winds will originate from the southwest. And if you look to the southwest from Illinois, what you would see is Nebraska, Kansas, even parts of Colorado, Texas, and then into the desert southwest near Arizona. That's dry air that's always located in those regions. And so when the winds are originating from there, you're not tapping directly into the Gulf of Mexico, which is 2 hours due south. So we're not going to see the ideal setup for heavy rain with low-level winds feeding in from the south. But the thing you need to keep in mind is that at this time of the year, we have an independent source of humidity, and that's from all the soil moisture that exists from all the rains that we've seen over the course of the summer. As everybody knows, in Illinois and all across the Corn Belt, we have these very nice, deep, and rich soils that can retain water relatively easily. And so when it gets warm outside, anything above 75 to 80 degrees, you start to evaporate that soil moisture, and that turns into humidity. And that's what eventually feeds right back into the system by creating more rain once energies move across and interact with that humidity. And that's why in the summertime, once you start getting some good rains early in the season, you tend to keep them going throughout the season just because there's this feedback loop where it rains, goes into the soil, it evaporates, and then turns back into rain. Once you get into September and October and in the wintertime, the only real way to get humidity in here is by the way you mentioned, which is where you must have southerly winds from the Gulf of Mexico because temperatures are too cool and soils don't have enough water to evaporate into the atmosphere and then turn back into rain. So it's not overly concerning that we don't have an ideal setup at the moment, simply because there is enough humidity in the air just from the soil moisture that'll feed into the system over the next couple of weeks.
Good stuff. Thank you so much. I appreciate it, and we'll talk with you again next week.
Yeah, sounds great. Looking forward to it.
Mike Tenura is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois. Joined us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.